This is Mountain News and World Report, WMMT's weekly sojourn into life in Central Appalachia. We now invite you to join us for a visit with folks you may or may not know, items of interest to us all, and shining moments in our living history.
Every night there is a morning, for every poem there's a tune, and I hope each cold December melts away to sunny June, and I wish that every outcast was welcomed back into the fold, and teardrops were diamonds, and wishes were.
Hi there, and welcome to Mountain News. I'm your host, Elizabeth Sanders. In this episode, we'll hear stories of Eastern Kentucky's second ever Pride Festival, hemp growers in the region forming cooperatives, a dedication to miners who have died of black lung in Letcher County, and some results of a survey by a group called What's Next EKY. First, on Saturday, October 12th, in the Pikeville City Park, more than 500 people gathered for Eastern Kentucky's second ever Pride Festival. Drag performers and musicians from Kentucky, Tennessee, and North Carolina performed. Organizers served free pizza and rainbow cupcakes. Dogs in rainbow hats and bandanas paraded across the plaza, and LGBTQ Kentuckians and their allies of all ages gathered for celebration. WMMT's Rachel Gehringer spoke with several attendees about the event.
So the first question is kind of for you to introduce yourself, who you are, where you're from, and why you came out today.
People know me as Hefner the Hare, and I'm from lovely Kentucky, and I came out here today because it's really important to make it known that we are here and that we deserve to be out in the daylight celebrating as much as anybody else.
Did you come last year to Pikeville Pride?
No, I wasn't sure if it was going to be a big event or how everything was going to go down, but after seeing Weird Appalachia cover it, I was like, that's something I need to be at next year.
Have you ever been to Pride in a small town before?
I've never been to Pride in a big town before.
This is your first Pride?
Yes.
Awesome. What do you think so far?
I think it's really positive. It makes me feel really emotional and at the same time really accepted.
Is there more you could say about that?
Well, my family didn't really support me coming out when I did about 15 years ago. This area is really religious, but I want people to find a balance around here, to know that we can all get along, we can find common ground, and there may even be religious people within this community. So, yeah.
What are your kind of hopes for, based on this event, like seeing this event in the town like Pikeville, does it give you any sort of like ideas about the town you live in or other possibilities in rural places in Kentucky?
Around here, it's pretty easy to watch the moss grow because nothing ever changes. So I feel like things like this are moving us all forward more into that change that's coming, whether we accept it or we don't. And I really hope that it continues around here. There's a lot of young people around here that really need this kind of outlet who don't have supportive families or things going on within the school system around here and injustices of that nature. So if there's anywhere where there's a safe place where they could feel accepted or not alone, that is valuable. Absolutely.
Cool. Anything else you want to say about this event or just anything we've been talking about?
Just have a happy Pride and celebrate who you are no matter who you are.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I guess just if you could sort of introduce yourself and say who you are and where you're from and why you're here today.
Yeah. I'm Erin Elise Conley. I'm from Sayersville, and I do the Weird Appalachia podcast, and I came out basically to document this because we came to the first Pikeville Pride and made a video, and we had an awesome time, and I just think that what they're doing here is so important that it needs to be documented.
What is the Weird Appalachia podcast?
It's a podcast that I do, and I do with my friends, and we kind of started off mostly art, but we're Appalachian, and there's so much amazing culture here that is part of that. So we talk about Appalachian culture, all its weird, quirky parts, and the artists that we know, and it's a good time.
And what do you enjoy about Pikeville Pride last year and this year?
Well, the big part that drew us out here was the drag show, because, I mean, when else are you going to see a drag show in the middle of Pikeville? But really, what makes it amazing is the crowd, all the people who come from all the way around all the other counties just to be here to celebrate this.
I guess, is there anything you think people should know about this event that they might not?
Well, I don't know. I guess, really, it's just, I would like to see more things like this. Because, I mean, they planned it out of nowhere last year and in no time and had an amazing turnout, and it's doable in these rural areas like this. We could totally make this happen in every county. So yeah.
Thank you. What's your name and why'd you come out today?
My name is Al Engelhart, and I came out because of Gay Pride, and Anson wanted to come with us.
And where do you live?
Actually, Florida and Ashcamp, Kentucky.
Okay, great. And what's your dog's name?
Anson.
Hanson.
Anson, turn around.
What kind of dog is this?
It's a Saint Berdoodle, Saint Bernard French Poodle.
Wow.
That's it.
And I'm curious if you've ever been to a pride in a town this small before.
I'm sorry?
Have you ever been to a pride festival in a town this small before?
Never.
No. Have you been to prides in?
Yeah, in Florida, yes.
Florida?
Yes.
Yeah. What's it like so far? It looks like you might have just gotten here, but to be in a town like Pikeville having a pride festival.
Well, in Florida, it's a larger crowd, naturally, but it seems good that we're getting a good crowd in here. You know, things have changed in the last couple of years.
Yeah. Can I take a picture of you? And is it Hanson with an H or Anson? Anson.
Right.
Okay.
And David, this is actually David's dog.
Hi, that's your dog. Buddy. Can I ask you a couple questions for the radio station? Could you sort of introduce yourself and say where you're from?
I'm David Engelhart. I'm from Ashcamp, Kentucky, and also Florida, Sarasota, Florida.
Okay.
Both of them, yeah.
Great. And why did you want to come out today?
I just like to support the community and be a part of the community and help it build, help it grow, help the Pride Festival, and help the gay community grow. Yeah.
Well, and I was asking him if he'd ever been to a Pride Festival in a town this small before. Have you?
I have not. No. It's usually larger. Yeah, usually larger. But that's good. Yeah. It'll build up. That's the idea. Yeah. Hopefully so. Yeah.
And what's it? Did you grow up in Ashcamp?
Elkhorn City, Ashcamp area. Yeah. Pretty much. Yeah. I grew up there. Yeah.
So in Pike County?
In Pike County, yes, ma'am. All of my entire life, yes, ma'am. Yep.
And did you ever think there'd be a Pride Festival in Pike County?
I had not. No, I did not. And last year I was excited to see it. We were going to come, but we had to leave early last year, so we would have attended last year also. This year we stayed longer just for the Pride Festival.
Yeah.
So even though it's cooler, we would have been in Florida already, but we wanted to stay for this.
Yeah.
This year. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm wondering, like, what it means having lived in this county for a whole long time for it to be happening here.
It's wonderful. It's great. Well, the acceptance has been remarkable. There's been people everywhere that's been more accepting than I thought they would be. So we're excited about that. You know, in Florida, there's a big gay community there. You know, and here we're not aware of it, but there is here also. We just have to be out and about and see it. And that's what we're doing today, hopefully.
Yeah. So, yeah, the first thing would be just to introduce yourselves and say kind of who you are, where you're from, and why you came out today.
Hello, my name's Benjamin Lewis. I'm from Hazard, Kentucky. I came out today to support everyone, the LGBTQ+ community. I'm trying to actually help get a fairness ordinance in Hazard, so if we could, anybody could contact us, that would be awesome, you know.
Yeah. My name is Betsy Lewis, and I come from Hazard, and I come to Pikeville Pride to share my love and to get more understanding of everything and try to hope to get that in Hazard.
And you all were here last year?
Yeah, we came to support. We were so happy. It was their first Pride. We saw, you know.
So what do you think about this year compared to last year?
Well, there's a lot. They have a lot more, you know. I think they had a bigger budget this year, and, you know, the drag show was awesome. Everybody's so wonderful and loving and friendly. And, you know, it's really great because there's a lot of booths with information on how to, you know, get fairness, and they're doing studies and stuff like that.
I think it was amazing. Not saying that last year wasn't, but I think that they really did good on their budgeting. And I just think that it's wonderful this year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm so happy. Go ahead. Sorry. I didn't mean to
repeat. I've had a really lot of fun here, especially with the booth for the mom hugs. I think that is amazing that you guys do that.
Yeah.
Because I don't have that in my life. So I do come to things like this to try to, you know, get involved with, you know, a mom figure.
Yeah.
I just think that's amazing that y'all do that.
Yeah, I'm really happy that we got to come this year, and, you know, I hope they get to have it again next year, because we'll definitely be here to support everyone and have fun and, you know, just love everybody.
Had y'all been to a Pride before Pikeville Pride last year?
No, actually, that was our first Pride that we got to attend, so it was awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, first Pride.
And what's it like to kind of have Pride in the place that you live, like in a small town in East Kentucky, versus a lot of people have to, you know, before this, people would travel to Lexington or to Cincinnati or to wherever for Pride, you know?
This is amazing to have it so close to Hazard, and it makes me feel like Kentucky is really becoming opening. You know, we've come a long ways, and this shows it, and it's just amazing.
I'm just glad that, you know, it's closer, because you feel more at home. You get to meet people and connect. And for me being transgender, you know, I met some kids earlier that, you know, touched my heart, and I'm going to help them in any way I can. So that kind of made my heart smile. I was really, really happy about that, you know.
You were saying you're trying to get a fairness ordinance passed in Hazard, and if folks wanted to get involved, that they could maybe contact you. Is that right?
Yes, they could contact me at Benjamin Lewis. It's benlewis032@gmail.com if they'd be interested in maybe helping and, you know, helping me figure out who I need to talk to. You know, even though, you know, I may be moving from Kentucky, I would still like to get a fairness ordinance in Hazard to protect the youth and protect the older generation and my generation, you know. I mean, discrimination is all around. And, you know, if you're not in the LGBTQ+ community, you're not discriminated against, really. So you're not gonna see that, you know, how we can lose jobs and lose housing, and, you know, it's a real problem, you know. So you know, I'd really like, if anybody wants to come help and contact me, and we can maybe figure out how to get a Pride going on there, you know, and let everybody know that that is LGBTQ+, that, you know, we're out here, we love you guys, and we're trying to help.
Those were voices from Pikeville, Kentucky's second ever Pride Festival in the Pikeville City Park on October 12, 2019. Next up, WMMT's Sydney Bowles brings us a story about the unveiling of a memorial in Whitesburg's Riverside Park on Sunday, October 13th, honoring the memory of 200 miners who have died of black lung.
The event attracted roughly 100 residents to commemorate family members and friends lost to black lung disease. As a military trumpeter played taps, coal miners lifted the cover off the engraved headstone. On that stone were the names of some 200 local coal miners who had died of black lung. Marcy Tate runs a network of pulmonary rehab clinics for black lung patients, and she spoke at the event.
While the rest of the world turns a blind eye to our suffering here, we also fight. And I just want to tell you, the names that's on this monument today that we're honoring is just fuel for those of us that fought.
Federal regulators are scheduled to meet later this month to consider whether additional protections can prevent further instances of disease. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Sydney Bowles in Whitesburg, Kentucky.
WEKU's Tom Martin spoke with Betsy Whaley of MACID and Dan Click of Grayson Gallery and Arts Center about the results of a survey conducted by What's Next EKY.
Betsy Whaley is Executive Vice President of MESA, the Mountain Association for Community Economic Development, based in Berea. She joins us along with Dan Click, Director and Gallery Coordinator of the Grayson Gallery and Arts Center. They're here to talk to us about an initiative called What's Next Eastern Kentucky, or EKY. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
So, Betsy, first, what is What's Next EKY?
What's Next EKY is a network of community partners and regional partners who are working together to lift up the stories of what's happening in Eastern Kentucky, to create a mutual learning network, and to try to work together and collaborate on regional initiatives.
Okay, and I understand that you just recently finalized a partnership agreement with member organizations. Besides your own, May said, who else has signed on?
Well, on the steering committee, we have the Grayson Gallery and Arts Center. Dan, you can help me here, so okay. Jump in.
All right.
The Office of the Mayor in Prestonsburg, Kentucky is on the steering committee. The Olive Hill Council for Planning and Restoration, the Letcher County Culture Hub in Whitesburg.
And
I think that's all for the steering committee. And then regional partners, we have MACID, Apple Shop, the Brushy Fork Institute at Berea College, the Air Institute at Berea College, CEDIC, K-Card, and the Foundation for Appalachia Kentucky, and Community Farm Alliance.
That's a pretty solid roster you have there.
Yep.
Dan, what attracted you to this?
Well, I've been involved in community for a long time, and this was one of the first concentrated efforts I'd seen that was towards a common goal to just bring everybody together. So having volunteered for years, it was just kind of nice to see some direction to all this.
Mm-hmm. Now, tell us about a recent survey that was taken among people in the region. What was the aim?
Well, over the last 2 years, this group has been working together to really figure out how we can work together and what are the common assets in the region that we could grow and what are the common challenges. And so we thought we had a pretty good idea of that because, you know, this is a bottom-up network, which means we really are working at the community level. We're not coming in with top-down initiatives. And so we have community members on the steering committee. We thought we think we know what it is, but we want to test our assumptions. So we sent out a survey asking people to respond to talk about what are the good things in their community, what would they like to see, what are the barriers that inhibit growth. And, you know, the good news is we pretty much confirmed what we already thought.
That's interesting. Maybe each of you want to answer this question, but I'm curious, what did you find? What were the responses?
Oh, in a lot of ways, they weren't too surprising. It was mostly the same things. People were trying to really realize what they had to focus on initially at their own level, you know, their own communities. But then the answers about most things that people felt they wanted or needed were also pretty consistently the same. We'd come in with those assumptions, but once you see it on paper and maybe some little fine points, the rest of it just seemed to make sense. With what we'd already done.
And some of the things we saw in the survey were that people are very aware of and proud of their place and the beautiful geography of Eastern Kentucky and the cultural assets. People celebrate the community that they find in their local place and feel like that's a real strength of Eastern Kentucky. You know, on the other hand, they would like to see more diversity, a more diverse economy, more diversity within leadership. Almost universally, people are concerned about the opioid epidemic and what that means for families and, you know, grandparents raising grandchildren. They're worried about extraction and, you know, not wanting to recreate a mono economy that is extractive.
In interview after interview that we have here on Eastern Standard with people from a variety of walks of Eastern Kentucky life, we hear the same refrain put one way or another, and that is that it's time to stop waiting for answers and for help from outside the region and to start looking for ideas and solutions within our communities. Do you want to add your voices to that point of view?
I do. I think so much of it has already been going on. There's just not been a lot of awareness. And so that same voice that's had these problems or these desires or their accomplishments had all come together to realize that it was very common, much more common than I think each individual community realized. Once you started seeing everyone together and along with our long list of bullet points, almost everyone could meet each one of those as well. So it was just something more common than expected.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Dan has a great story of doing exactly what you just said, you know, starting, not waiting for somebody else. You know, we've heard that a lot. You know, we've waited for somebody else to save us. We have to save ourselves. And, you know, we have to build on what we have. And, you know, the Grayson Gallery is a great example of doing just that.
I know that your survey found a lot of people believing tourism is the future of Eastern Kentucky. It's a very diverse region. with no shortage of opinions about what that should look like. Does there need to be some sort of structure or organization to prevent working at cross purposes as we kind of go toward that goal?
I believe there must be some type of concentrated effort to bring those folks together, too. We, coincidentally, about the time this whole grassroots movement started, it seemed like, in our area anyway, a FiveCo region that is, one of those community ad groups, they'd also called a meeting to try to network the tourism groups together. So it was the first meeting we'd attended after our What's Next EKY get-together was all about tourism. So I think people are realizing we've got to work together.
Your survey found that people are calling for more employment opportunities. And besides tourism, what other economic development drivers do you think might work in the area?
One thing that Mesa is focusing on is trying to build out certain sectors. And one of those sectors is the creative economy. You know, East Kentucky has a rich history of arts and culture. And the report that the Kentucky Arts Council produced in 2014 showed that more people are self-employed in the creative economy than any other economic sector. And so we feel like there's a lot of potential for entrepreneurship within the creative economy. Lots of people are artists and know how to produce, but need help figuring out how to make a livelihood out of that. We're also focusing on the energy sector with MACID, where there's great opportunities building out energy efficiency and clean energy within this region. The food sector with local food and our partner Community Farm Alliance is doing a lot of work in that area. Mm-hmm. I think tourism, again, is a great potential, but I think there are dangers around tourism as well. It can be exploitive of local cultures and people and places. It can be extractive. You know, people from the outside can come in and own things and kind of take the profit out of the region. But I think there are a lot of opportunities in Eastern Kentucky.
There are some other towns that we haven't mentioned coming to the table that I would think could benefit from joining, places like Sandy Hook or West Liberty, Moorhead, mm-hmm. to name a few. Are you all in communication with those folks?
We started right off the bat a Facebook page, a little social media thing, to try to at least get the word out and connect people. But what we found is there's been so many little small projects, small accomplishments, and those kind of things that just hadn't been shared with others. So we decided to start sharing them with each other, and that network is also growing on social media. And then anything beyond all the press we are getting and information that people are getting out there, it just seems like the word is beginning to be spread. So,
yeah, we're very much in the incubation stage. And so we have relationships with people in a lot of communities, and we're in the midst of figuring out how do we help those communities connect and form a network. And so we're really thinking about this as a marathon rather than a sprint. This is long-term work. Building a network takes many, many years. And what we want to do is make the network valuable to people. We don't want to create meetings for people to come to just to come to a meeting.
Well, I'm a musician, and I can't help myself. When I'm talking about things, sometimes they turn into songs in my mind. And right now, the one that's playing on a loop is, do you remember Lonnie Mack, the great legendary Cincinnati guitar player?
He was
something else. He had a song that we used to try to copy a long time ago, Where There's a Will, There's a Way. That seems to be a theme song going on here, wouldn't you say?
Yes, I do. And it, I believe that definitely the will and the heart of the people are there. So I just believe we're starting to see it happen.
Well, if somebody from a community that we haven't mentioned here or hasn't stepped up to the plate yet hears this and they'd like to get in touch and learn more, who should they contact and how?
Well, we have a Facebook page, as Dan mentioned. We have a Facebook page and a Facebook group, What's Next EKY. We also have a website, which is whatsnexteky.org, and there are ways to connect on all of those places.
Betsy Whaley is Executive Vice President of MACED, the Mountain Association for Community Economic Development, based in Berea, and she has been with us along with Dan Click, Director and Gallery Coordinator of the Grayson Gallery and Arts Center. And thank you both for coming in.
Thank you.
Last in this episode of Mountain News from Ohio Valley Resource reporter Liam Niemeyer, we hear from Appalachian hemp growers who are working together to form farmers' cooperatives.
Some Ohio Valley farmers are reaping their first hemp harvest since federal law changed to legalize hemp. With some 27,000 acres under production in the region, hemp is booming, but it remains a risky crop with uncertainty about markets, growing practices, and concern that larger players could squeeze out small growers. Liam Niemeyer reports some hemp farmers are forming new cooperatives to reduce that risk and protect small farmers.
Tony Silvernail swings a heavy machete at a stalk of bushy hemp and grabs the 5-foot-tall plant with his sun-weathered hand. It's an unusually hot October day on his farm near Frankfort, Kentucky. Yet Silvernail is celebrating his hemp harvest with a sweat-soaked shirt, a huge smile, and a fat cigar between his teeth.
It's just fun. I mean, this is a payoff right here.
Leaving the day with all your fingers is good.
Silvernail has grown organic food for decades. It wasn't until last fall when he and a business partner decided to try their luck at growing organic hemp. But he says he was struggling to get more experienced hemp growers to help him start.
The hemp industry is very closed, it still is. I got in a bad mood and I'm sitting there eating lunch and I really came to a moment where, you know what, we got to just do our own thing.
So Silvernail co-founded a cooperative for small, inexperienced hemp growers like himself to help each other learn. The co-op also buys supplies like hemp seeds in bulk and sells the co-op's collective hemp harvest. Cooperatives aren't a new idea in farming, but they're new in the hemp industry. And many Ohio Valley hemp growers are choosing to join cooperatives to share supplies and compete in an increasingly competitive marketplace.
That's our goal, is to be able to keep the 5-acre farmer in business, you know, even when the bigger companies, you know, move into this space.
That's J. Morgan Leach, founder of the West Virginia Farmers Cooperative. Leach says he's worried about the potential for future large-scale hemp production that could push smaller hemp growers out. By banding together, small farmers can compete with larger-scale production. Members of Leach's cooperative also can vote, for example, on what supplies the cooperative buys. He looks to the poultry industry as a cautionary tale. In poultry, large companies often have extensive control over a farmer's production and pricing.
They're totally, you know, hamstrung to the price that the company gives them because they just how it goes in that industry. Here, this is a new frontier.
Jeffrey Young is an agriculture economist with Murray State University's Center for Agricultural Hemp in West Kentucky. He agrees the potential is there for future hemp consolidation.
I don't want to say join or die, but, you know, it would definitely be in a smaller operator's best interest to join in on that because they wouldn't have the acreage or the volume or the clout that a larger operator would have.
Young says the new industry is still years away from reaching that level of hemp production, and the amount of hemp grown in the Ohio Valley continues to skyrocket. Ohio only legalized growing hemp in July. Julie Dorn founded the Ohio Hemp Farmers Cooperative in anticipation of that day. She says she believes there's a place for smaller farmers alongside larger investors. But she also cautions farmers need to learn how to grow the new crop reliably first before working with bigger companies.
Yes, corporate is going to come in and we are going to need them for an outlet to sell all this stuff to, but we need to learn ourselves first and get our feet wet before we jump in.
Dorn says in an expanding and changing industry like hemp, it's better for farmers to stick together. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Liam Niemeyer.
That's it for this episode of Mountain News. If you'd like to hear this or previous episodes again, you can find them on our website at www.wmmt.org or download Mountain News as a podcast from SoundCloud or Stitcher. Music on this episode features Tom Bledsoe and Rich Kirby with a tune called If Wishes Were Gold. I've been your host, Elizabeth Sanders, and from all of us at WMMT, thanks for listening to Real People Radio.
And teardrops were diamonds, and wishes were gold. I remember all the young men, all my friends gone before, torn from dreams of love and home, to be shot down in crazy war.
I wish that freedom was. This has been Mountain News and World Report, a production of WMMT-FM, Mountain Community Public Radio, the non-commercial broadcast service of the world-famous Apple Shop in Whitesburg, Kentucky.